Hey everyone, this is Paul Siegel, and you're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs comes to you live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern, and you can catch us on twitch.tv/wanderingdms or youtube.com/wanderingdms/live. And now, on with the show.
Hi everyone, welcome to Wandering DMs. I'm Paul.
And I'm Dan, and today on Wandering DMs, we're going to be talking about player secrets in D&D games. How should you handle them? When should you reveal them? And what is the best way to apply Aristotle's anamnesis? All that and more today on Wandering DMs.
Everyone, before we begin today's discussion, I want to remind you all that, as always, at the end of the show, we'll be hosting our after-party chat. That is a private video chat with Dan and I and all of our patrons. And you can join in on it by simply becoming a patron at our Patreon. Just visit patreon.com/wanderingdms, pledge at any tier, and you'll get an invite to our Discord server. Join in the Discord server, and around 10 after 2 Eastern time, we'll be there to have a chat with all of our patrons.
We love that part of our week every week, so please join us there if you can. So, Paul, this idea of player secrets, I thought was a really good one, and I guess this comes partly out of your play at the Rising Phoenix convention a couple weeks ago. So I'm personally really curious about how that, in what way that came up in your games the other week.
You know, I think this happens. This is probably one of those things that happens more often in horror games, or something that's a little more plot and character driven, less adventure gamey than D&D. Although I've seen it actually, I have a couple anecdotes of it coming up in D&D, so I'm sure it happens there as well. But the gist is simply this: the character, either because it's a pregen and it was written that way, or because the player created it that way, has some kind of secret, something unusual about their background or their past that they would rather everyone not know about. And, you know, the advice, I'm going to just jump straight to the advice if I can, actually. Here's the bottom line of what I'm going to be talking about today is this. If your character has a secret, I think it is your job as a player to make sure it comes out, right? The joy of having a secret like that is the dramatic. If you keep your secret for the entire game, why? Who cares that it even existed?
Well put.
That's the core of my advice. So I have a few horror scenarios that I'm looking to publish that I run at conventions. So they're one shot convention games, and usually the characters I create for those games they have some little bit of background. And I like to do this a lot in my horror games, where the characters have some pre-existing drama or friction between them that has nothing to do with the horrific happenings. So usually that gives the players a little bit of a hook, a little thing to roleplay, and it's a little grist for the mill for when the horrors happen. You know, those any little frictions that the characters may have had now can be really blown out, right? If two characters are in love or are mortal enemies or are, you know, in conflict in some way, then suddenly when the horrors show up, they're going to have to make a decision to either, you know, just let it go or really dive full-fledged into it. So I'm going to give some examples. This is going to be, spoiler alerts, folks, for unpublished Fearful End scenarios that will probably be coming. Anyone who reads my blog probably already knows all this stuff because I write about these scenarios on my blog in the past. See, the one I was running at Rising Phoenix is called Closed for Swimming, and it's kind of loosely inspired by the movie Jaws. So it's set in the early 90s on sort of a beachfront location in the summer, and there's a shark attack happens, and they shut down the beaches, and all the local businesses are really suffering because they all basically make their living off of tourism. And nobody wants to come to a beach that's full of dangerous sharks. And then, of course, the horror comes up that, of course, it's not sharks at all, right? It's deep ones, and the government is just made a lie to cover up their investigations into what's going on. And the players kind of pick that apart. So anyway, there's the background of that. There's the broad strokes of that scenario. One of the characters happens to be an FBI agent, and it is not obvious, right? It is they're undercover. They're an undercover FBI agent. This character is totally based on Keanu Reeves from what was the name of that movie? Point Break.
Right. Yep.
So he's a, totally. He's a surfer, and he's posing as a dive instructor, and he's actually there to investigate one of the other characters who also has a secret, who happens to be involved in organized crime. So they're a small business owner that do a boat rental place, but ultimately it's all a front for organized crime, and they're really just there. The main purpose of the business is to launder money. And so the FBI agent is trying to investigate the mobster. All that's just kind of cooking under the covers because the government that shut down. There's another group of FBI agents who are there who have shut down the beach and are responsible for investigating the Deep Ones things, but they're a totally different branch or totally different group. So the player character who's an FBI agent doesn't know any of this or isn't plugged in, but has some background, right? So that is interesting because it can come out. Like that character will inevitably know things, right, about practices and policies and maybe, you know, have contacts that they can dig up to help move the plot along. But of course, if they do, that's maybe going to blow their cover, which is fine, right? That's the fun part. Honestly, right. The fun part of the game is to see that come out, right? Like I've run this scenario a bunch of times, and I've had some very enjoyable moments where, you know, things start to go sideways and that character steps forward and says, look, I'm taking control, right? I am in charge now. And everybody's surprised. They're like, what? Yes. Random surfer dude? What's your deal? And he's like, well, I'm an FBI agent. And, you know, and I know this person and I know what's going on. And I'm taking charge and we're going to figure stuff out. But I've also run games. And frankly, this happened in my recent Rising Phoenix game just a few weeks ago, where that player just kept the secret the whole time. And never came out. They never let it out. They just kind of kept it low key, kept it hidden, right? Never told anyone what was going on. And so some oddities happen. You know, there's a moment of like, wait, why do you have a gun? Right? Why does surfer guy have a gun? What's going on? But they just kept it. And frankly, I think that's less fun. I don't know. I think that's, I don't want to overly editorialize on my players, but like if I had been able to give some advice to that player, I'd say, like, let it out. Like, just tell them. Tell them what's going on. I have another scenario, actually, similarly, where there's a character who's an undercover MI6 agent. And I've had some really delightful scenarios where that player just dumps it on the... And it just says, look, everyone, weird stuff is going on well beyond... You know, I thought I knew all the secrets, but I clearly don't because there's crazy things happening. So here's let me share with you what I do know. And it's a delightful moment, right? It's a nice little surprise moment for the other players. And it kind of, you know, it feels like a little bit of a twist. And it's exciting and fun, I think, when it comes out. And it's very easy to make it happen, right? Just blurt it out. Or you know, I don't know, do something different, right? Maybe machinate. Or to accidentally get your character. This is a harder one, right? But like, if you're very clever as a player, like machinate ways to paint yourself into a corner, right? Which seems very contrary, I think, sure, to people who are trying to roleplay these characters. Like, why would I screw myself over? But like, I don't know. That's the thing. I try to impart this at the beginning of every Fearful Ends game. I'm like, the point of Fearful Ends is to fail. The point is that your characters are going to fall apart, right? They're going to, you know, it's Fearful Ends. Your character's going to meet an end, a bad one. Enjoy it. Enjoy the ride.
I wonder if, great observations, and I totally agree, the secrets need to come out. They need to come out, otherwise we really didn't dig into the entirety of the content in a situation like that. So I'm wondering if there needs to be some kind of like explicit encouragement, either just verbal encouragement from the referee or some kind of, or the referee just takes control of it and reveals the secret at, you know, by fiat, or if there needs to be some kind of mechanical construction to encourage that at an appropriate time. Because I can totally see, you know, the, well, my character wouldn't do this kind of thing. And, you know, you're actually making me think, the last time I played somebody else's game, one of our friends, and I, unfortunately, I can't remember the name of the system, but it was a fairly well-structured narrative game where we're all playing competing ninjas in modern day Japan. So we'll have, like, I don't know, the machinist ninja and the school teacher ninja and the student ninja and somebody else. And the game is clearly competitive. So you're setting up scenes and you're trying to get advantages on other people. And there is an actual point structure and someone's going to be declared the winner at the end. And so along the way, my character wound up being handed a secret. I didn't have it to begin with, but I got handed a secret that I was like the long lost protege of the villain who turned on them. And the villain had been hunting for them ever since, but had like a secret power against them. And so partly because I was incented to, you know, try to get one over on everybody else and score the most points, right? I hung on to that until the very end, until the very last culminating climactic scene. And what happened, and I, you know, I'm going to use my special power against the villain at the right time, but I blurted it out all very quickly, right? I'm like, oh, I'm the long lost protege and you didn't know that I had the secret power and I'm a different person and I rip off a disguise and I'm a completely different age than you thought, different age and gender than you thought I was, and here's the power. And the other characters were like, the other players were like, I didn't process any of that. That was like, I don't know what just happened here. And so by keeping it that, you know, I knew I was going to reveal it, but by keeping it that long and maybe not developing it properly, it all came out in a flood. In with a bunch of other stuff, and it didn't nearly have the impact that I guess that any of us were hoping for, frankly. So I don't know if that particular system in particular funneled me into that of, you know, being competitive, trying to earn points, and specifically trying to hold this in reserve as something I could use against other players. And maybe if the system had made it more explicit to, you know, dole out clues a couple times, maybe that would have been a better reveal.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, like you mentioned, like one thing that I could certainly do as GM of these games is just force the issue. If I recognize, oh, this player is not letting the secret out, I could have an NPC or somebody or something happen that just does it, right? Like, I know in my example of the Fearful Ends game, that I have this character who is in organized crime, and there's, in fact, this whole setup there of they're under a lot of pressure from the crime family because their whole point of existing is to launder money, so they need to generate, you know, fake sales, right, in this company. And if the whole beach is shut down and no one's doing any business, pretty hard, right, to generate fake boat rentals to fake customers, you know, to cover up the sources of this money that's showing up.
Nice.
And so they're constantly being called and harassed by other members of the crime family to be like, hey, what are you doing about this problem? So yeah, I could certainly have one of those NPCs just show up or call or something and just blurt out some unfortunate things in front of everyone. I think maybe it might be harder for the FBI agent unless I, you know, got another FBI agent involved or something. I don't know. But I don't know. It feels... I could do that, but it feels less good. I don't know how else to put that, right? Like I feel like when I've written these characters, I've given the player this little gift of, like, here's this interesting bit for you to do at some point during the game. Please do the bit. Right? And, so I'm surprised when players don't bite at that. But it does border into, I think, a conversation we've had in the past about sort of like player knowledge versus character knowledge, right? And the separation of player and character. Right? We've discussed that in the past. And I do think it is not super common for players to come to the table with that mental space, right? Of sort of like, I am almost... Because it almost pushes them into almost sort of a co-GM kind of role, right? Like, I'm here... I'm here to progress the story and the plot in a delightful way, and my character is just a pawn in making that happen. rather than like my character is the protagonist and I, you know, everything must, you know, circle around them.
Right. Right. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I think for maybe someone who's who's well experienced in those types of games might see the point themselves more easily. And maybe someone who's brand new to role-playing games in general would not immediately pick up on, I need to actually do something that's interesting that would, in some sense, disadvantage my character. So I can see that.
Now, in general,
we should go ahead.
I was going to say we could maybe compare this to some other situations that are easier for us to look back on. I think one of the things we should talk about here is our Halloween game of we played with WebDM, where I was a plant, right? I pretended to be a player, and the whole time my character absolutely had a big secret that we intentionally planned for a reveal point. Now that was much more scripted, right? That's much more like, no, we know at
right.
this point in the game it will come out and
yes. yeah.
this thing will happen. It's interesting, right? Because that's something you and I discussed well in advance. So I almost
right.
wonder.
And we've done it before, right? You know, we've done it at HelgaCon once. So it wasn't our first rodeo with that. And we knew, and I mean, you were having a lot of fun with it because, I mean, in particular, you were getting a whole lot of subtext with people threatening the villain, not knowing that you were the villain. And once again, we knew that it was going to be revealed and come to play in the big boss fight at the end. And I'll say that's another example. As I attempt on my end as ref, as I attempt to improve my pacing in these games, and I attempt to, that's another case where I wish I'd gotten to that last scene earlier, right? It had gone a little bit long. I probably should have cut some other scenes to get to that point. And once again, similarly, the reveal in that last scene was just a tiny bit rushed, perhaps, and coming up right at the end when there was a bunch of other stuff happening. So that's another example on Dan's part of maybe I could have pushed that forward a little bit more quickly.
It's interesting. I feel like what we're circling around here is a little bit of player advice of like, not only if you're playing a character who has a secret, not only are we advising like, yes, make the secret come out, but like keep an eye on the pacing and try to get the secret out early.
Yeah.
Right. Like part of the fun of the secret coming out is then dealing with the ramifications and the fallout and the recovery from that. And then the new world order that exists now that the secret is known.
Right.
And you want to have plenty of time to play all that stuff out. So having it happen in the last 10 minutes of the game is maybe not as satisfying as having it happen halfway through the game.
So we had a gag at the start of the show here, and thanks to you, Paul, that looked this up because I had never heard of this, frankly, myself. So you find this reference to a term from Aristotle called anagnorisis, if I got that right. In a play. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm very curious because I only know this term because I discovered it haphazardly on Wikipedia, but Google tells me it's pronounced anagnorisis.
Really?
Anagnorisis.
But that's anagnorisis.
Anagnorisis.
Okay. You know what? I have no reason to think otherwise, frankly.
If there's any viewer who like is more familiar with this term and wants to tell us how to say it out loud properly, we'd appreciate it.
please put it in the chat in international phonetic code, please. So the fact there's a specific term for the moment in a play or dramatic work where a character discovers some really critical piece of information. And I think you're right that serves as a pivot. If it was the very last thing, then it doesn't give it any different shape to the dramatic work. So I think that what we're circling around is it probably ought to be revealed earlier rather than later. So let me ask this. So obviously, right, the when is the best time to reveal it depends on the scope of your play. So, and as we've talked a lot about, There's a big difference between a one-shot convention session and an open ongoing D&D campaign. So for starters, Paul, if you had to pick, if you had a one-shot convention game and it was 4 hours, when would be the best time for a big player secret reveal like that?
I would say at about 2 hours, right? Right about at the halfway point. Where I would want to see it happen. Ideally, right? And then again, there's context there of like, where are we in the game and does it make sense? And, you know, yeah, you want it to feel good. But like in this case, right? So typically what happens in my games, especially the horror games, what happens is in the early stages of the game, there's some weird mystery or something going on that the players are investigating that seems normal, right? And the ramp up of the supernatural and the ramp up of the mental stress is very much like a kind of exponential ramp, right, throughout the game. I've played games where in the first four-hour game, in the first 2 hours, there's almost no mental stress card draws at all. And then by the very end of the game, we've run out the deck, right? So it just ramps up, right, very quickly. So I would think, if I were playing in this game, right, I would think that it's just as the supernatural stuff becomes evident and we've gotten to a point where we all accept something weird and supernatural is happening. Right, so if I'm playing the FBI agent, I think I would be playing the like, oh, I got the secret. I'm a secret FBI agent. I'm trying to find out about this other player, and I'm trying to be very, you know, sneaky and backhanded about discussing things with them. You know, to try and, you know, worm my way in and find some evidence that they are, you know, a criminal. And then as like we discover evidence of going, oh my gosh, there's something nefarious going on, there's a government cover-up and there's something supernatural happening that is truly dangerous, I think at that point say like, all right, I pick up the phone and I call my boss at the FBI, right? I'm just gonna have this conversation in front of everyone, right? Something like that, right? Just to be like, right. Oh, by the way, I'm an FBI agent, I'm calling this in because this is weird. I'm blowing my own cover. Something truly unusual is happening here and we need help, right? Is probably what I would do with that.
That's great. I think as a player, I think that's sooner than I would expect. I think if I get handed a prepared secret like that, I think the first thing that pops into my own head is like, this is going to be the climax. This is going to be the climax of the story at the end. And I guess I keep making that happen in my games. And so I think for me, that's slightly unintuitive. I mean, I totally am convinced that it absolutely should happen about halfway through. And I don't think that's my first intuition when I sit down with a role like that. So I think that's good to reflect on.
You know, let me share another just anecdote of actually a case where I ran this game where actually what happened was amazing, right? So in the very beginning of the game, the players are just kind of getting to know each other, just trying to figure out what's what. I had one player who was, again, playing this FBI agent who intentionally separated themselves from the group, snuck away, and broke into the business of this person they're trying to investigate. And we had to do a little, like, separate, you know, solo encounter of like, okay, you're breaking in, and they're doing things like, breaking in, searching for files. They're discussing with me what they're looking for. They're even like calling into their supervisor to like say like, hey, I'm here's a status update. Here's what's going on. So basically, letting all the information about their background out onto the table by having this scene in public, but the other characters aren't there, right? So they've just absolutely blown the secret, like, incredibly early, like, within, like, the first half hour, they've blown the secret. But they've blown the secret to the players, but not the characters. So now we all know that this character is an FBI agent who's investigating a criminal. And so he's also blown the secret of the criminal. But now we all get to, like, kind of enjoy the tension of knowing that this is happening and then getting the characters back together and having them kind of talk in ways that are, like, you know, not, you know, they're where they assume that all that information is still secret. It's really, it was a very pro move, I thought.
Yes, right. Yeah, that's masterful. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
That's really neat. I think that I'm trying more generally. Go ahead.
I wanted to like, since we're talking about like the when, right? I thought maybe we should look at this quote that you have here. Great. So I don't know the context of this quote.
Before you bring it up, let me. Yeah. Okay. Oh, so this is from, and there's a spoiler here. Okay. There's a spoiler here. This is about the comic book Invincible, which I read in the last year. And so the creator is Robert Kirkman. And I think it started about 2005, ran for 15 years. And as we know, it's now turned into a multi-season Amazon animated series. So very, very successful, very, very long running, particularly for like an indie comic book like that. So Robert Kirkman here. So the comic ran for 144 issues, a gross. And in the very last issue, Kirkman writes about the inception, and he's thanking a bunch of people that were critical for him getting Invincible on the page. And so there is a little bit of a spoiler in here. So those of you looking in video, look away if you don't want to see the major spoiler to Invincible. And what Kirkman says here is he says, huge thanks to Eric Stevenson, Jim Valentino, and Eric Larson for helping this book land at Image Comics, giving it the platform that it had, and also for a ton of help and advice along the way. Jim Valentino, when I told him the spoiler here was going to happen in issue number 25 and reveal that somebody's really a bad guy, Valentino responded, move that up or there's not going to be an issue number 25. And when I told him I might be able to push it to issue number 12, now they're negotiating. And Valentino says, can you get it to issue number 5? And they finally landed on, I finally put it in issue number 7. And Kirkman here says, yeah, he's right. The series, all caps, definitely wouldn't have made it to issue number 25 if he hadn't done that. So big thanks, Jim. And elsewhere in this letter page, Kirkman is saying that Invincible was at risk of being canceled around issue number 12. The sales weren't great. And so around number 12 or number 13, they were thinking they were going to probably end it. And then the sales started to tick up right around issue number 12, number 13 to make it an ongoing success. But how interesting is that? Is this reveal isn't just like one little thing. It shapes the entire story of what the whole world of Invincible is fundamentally about. And so if the creator's instinct was to not reveal what it was about for 2 years until, you know, issue number 25, and if they hadn't moved it up by about 4 times earlier, they never would have gotten to the reveal. And I think that's a really interesting case study that the person making the secret felt that it should build, that it should linger for a long time. But if they had gone with that, they actually never would have gotten to the reveal. And the whole project would have been canceled. And it had to be moved up. That's a big difference from issue number 25 to what Jim Valentino was suggesting. Issue number 5, 4 or 5 times earlier is actually what it took. So we can all think Valentino for that advice and Kirkman for having the good sense to take that advice. And I think that's a really interesting example of how much sooner than you expect you need to reveal the secret.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's, I mean, it makes so much sense to me though, right? Like that's like, again, the joy of it is, you know, having that dramatic reveal and then having the fallout from that reveal and then having the story progress in this new light of like, oh, things are different than we anticipated. Right. I think that's,
yes,
it's delightful. Yes. And you don't want to cut that short. You want to have time to revel in the moment of shock and then the whatever actions are going to happen as a result. Right. Like, you know, there might be some immediate reactions that are probably bad, right? Probably bad, but you know, you might have some immediate reactions that shake things up a bit, and then you want to also then see how does the story progress now that everybody knows this big secret and now that it's out there.
And when I read this reflection, honestly, I thought of advice that you've given me, Paul, more than once, and that is to make the game about the thing that it's about. I've stumbled on that, but that particular reveal in Invincible is really what the whole world is entirely about, and they had to get that on the table. It's the fundamental premise about what Invincible is, and they had to get that on the table for people to appreciate and even really know what the comic that they're reading is fundamentally about. So it's an interesting creator dilemma, frankly.
I think that advice comes to us from Jeff Rientz in Jeff Rientz game blog. Keep the main thing the main thing. Which I think is delightful. I love that point. This is what we're here for, right? This is what we're here for, this content, right? Like, why keep it hidden and why be coy about it? Like, get it out there and like, let's really revel in it, because that's what we sign up for.
Let's talk about this in terms of you're coming out of a one-shot convention game. It was a horror game where this might happen. So let's talk about like a more ongoing campaign. And I'll say that more generally, I'm actually trying to get better myself at paying off player character backstories. And it's not something that's necessarily in my toolkit, because as someone that runs classic D&D, you don't even emphasize characters don't have backstories. So when players come to the table and they have something like that, I'm still kind of developing my chops to pay that off. And again, I think that in the past, I've like just assumed that it would just automatically happen at some point, or I'd have a bright idea at some point, and then maybe the campaign didn't actually last that long. So that's actually happening in my game at the moment, and I'm trying to make more explicit plans to bring that kind of stuff up earlier. So you and I played a long-running campaign, Paul, where we were co-DMs, and one of the players made a character with a very long-running secret. Okay, spoiler to a campaign that no one's ever going to see, but they were essentially a traitor for a foreign government. And that was held in reserve for years. For, I believe, some number of years. And as far as we could tell, the character was just kind of a jerk.
Yeah. I mean, that's the most fascinating thing about that was the buildup, right? That player, you know, played that character as really just a pain in the ass. Like, we all, you know, I remember there was even some player tension around that. There was some players who were like, I just don't like playing with him. Is it the other player a jerk? Like, I just don't. You know, like, I normally get along with this guy, but for some reason in this game, I just find him incredibly irritating, and I don't want to play with him, right? And it turns out
this was a case where we clearly liked the player. Yeah, we clearly liked the player and didn't like the character, right?
And then it turns out he was doing it intentionally the whole time so that we would dislike his character, so that when he turned out to say, haha, I'm the villain, we would all delight in attacking and possibly killing that character. Right, we would all look like, yes, I knew it. He's a, but none of us knew it. Right, it was a complete surprise. I think it's very clever for him to have done this. But again, I would have
agreed.
It would have been nice if it had happened in month three and not, you know, after.
Well, there you go.
You know, 2 years of play.
I think I feel like that myself now. I think reflecting on it today, I think that perhaps ideally it would have come out sooner. So when I asked, like, with a one shot, when's the best time to reveal it? You said the halfway point, 2 hours. So what if you have an ongoing, infinite ended fantasy campaign or any type of science fiction campaign? Paul, when would you suggest that the big player secret be revealed?
I mean, it's hard to say, right? Because again, because it's open ended, so you can't say it in reference to, you know, the end. So you have to reference to the beginning. And I guess I just lean into like as early as is feasible, right? As early as you possibly can, right? Clearly he had to spend some time building that character up. Like his goal was to make us all irritated with that character. Fine. Granted that you need some number of sessions to establish that background, that character, but still, I think I would have pulled the trigger. I mean, certainly not the first session, but you know, I could see doing it as early as session four, right? Like, you could,
I could also see an issue,
especially with it in a D&D game, right, where your characters have this growth, right? You're Probably you started out as level one, and I'm sure in the back of his head somewhere is like, he's not a very exciting villain if he's a level one nothing.
Right.
You know, to come out and turn out to be a villain.
Yeah. Yes. This is a really good point. This is a really good counterpoint to that. And there's also the issue that the character's fundamentally, that particular character's basically over and out of the campaign once you do that. So there's the issue that you would actually have to go back to first or some lower level. And so there's again, additional mechanical incentive there to play until the end, experience all the D&D leveling system and not ditch that until the end. But I guess aside from that particular case where the character is going to be over once the secret was revealed, I think I'm leaning, I'm leaning towards, like, if I had to pick something like around three beats, like there's a clue and there's a bigger clue and then there's a reveal, like around three beats worth of the whole thing. And if that suggests session number three or something like that, I don't think that's crazy, actually. But I agree that pushing it earlier is a good idea.
It's interesting you point out that, like, it could be the end of that character, right? And certainly that's, in this case, that's what that player was imagining, right? It was like, I'm going to reveal that my character is the villain, and then, you know, everyone's going to, you know, absolutely delight in taking down this villain that I put energy into building up. But I could see taking this in a different way, right? Like, what if you want a redemption story? What if you want, like, maybe you could even have, you know, three or four sessions in, you could reveal, hey, turns out I've been the one who's been doing all these terrible things. I'm the cause of all this. I have been the villain, and I have regrets.
Yeah,
right. I have regrets, and I'm under the influence of this other external power. Please forgive me and help me bring retribution to big bad NPC out there in the world.
Yeah.
That's an interesting story, and that's too, right?
It's an interesting story. It's an interesting play. It's been used very successfully a number of times. That kind of happens in Invincible, for example. I was also, when I was thinking about this particular D&D game, I was also kind of thinking about the Justice League Unlimited animated series from, now we're talking 20 years ago or something like that, spoiler to that, the hot girl character is exactly in this situation, is exactly in the same, you know, sleeper cell for upcoming alien invasion. And I think that goes about two seasons and then gets revealed in the climax to season two. But then when they come back, there is a redemption arc. So that's a totally legitimate way to play that. And so if you do have a major traitor character, you should strongly consider that face flip plot, because it has been used very successfully a number of times. Yeah, that's a really good idea. I'll say that generally speaking, right, I'm not a super big, and I think this is something that you and I, that we all learned together in that campaign, as a matter of fact, Paul, is that I'm not a super big fan in the role-playing game of inter-party conflict. And we were finding ourselves in that campaign running up into that. And I think for maybe less experienced players, when you make a character backstory like that, it's kind of easy to go, I have a conflict with player character X. That's going to be the thing the plot's about. I'm going to have a conflict with somebody that I know is already on the table. And that tends to not be super great play over a long time. It tends to limit character growth, in my limited opinion. Mm-hmm. And so I think that my lesson from that whole campaign, it's the player's job to find a way for the secret to come. It's the player's job to find a reason to work with the other players, not against them. It's more interesting to have a team dynamic, to have a how do we accomplish these challenges as a team. And so the effort should go more into the players finding reasons to work together rather than apart. So all those secrets and all that backstory stuff should pivot towards how do we, if there is like an opposition, how do we get over it? What's the interesting dynamic that got us over it? And it's interesting because the couple of improv comedy classes that some of us here in New York have taken recently have said the same thing. And I had this lesson from our D&G games before that. And so I find it very interesting that the same thing came up in the improv comedy classes, is that argumentation is really easy and always comes off as flat and uninteresting. So a newbie improver is very likely to step into a scene and someone says, I have to get a new car, and to respond with, no, you don't. And the other person says, yes, I do. And like, no, you don't. And just have this yes, no action back and forth, even if they accept the premise, right? And the advice is, it's a lot more challenging and it's a lot more interesting to find a reason to work together, to go, okay, now what do I need to do to help you get the car? And where are our mutual challenges around that? Even if we're coming from different directions about that. And we've seen that on stage a number of times in some exercises, and it always has much more interesting stuff come out when you surprise yourself with how we're going to work together rather than just like butt loggerheads, which generally doesn't go anywhere. So it's interesting that we've had that lesson come up in a couple of different contexts. It's really your job to find a reason to work together as a team.
I feel like what you're digging at here is kind of just a great example, actually, honestly, of keep the main thing, right? If we go back to that original example of a player playing a character who they intend to be annoying so that when they flip and turn out to be a villain, that everybody delights in taking them down, right? Like, what is the actual enjoyable part of playing that character? Is it playing the annoying jerk that everybody, you know, that pushes people's buttons and they want to get rid of? Or is the enjoyable part the role play of after it's been revealed that they're a villain? And now we get to all shake our fists and either find some way to turn them and bring them around and have a redemption story, or to take them down because they're a villain that we all want to get rid of, right? Like, that's, you know, by focusing so much energy and so much time on role playing out the, you know, annoying jerk part, right? You're pushing the main thing out, right? You're not focusing on the main thing. The main thing is, I'm secretly a villain, right? Or I'm ultimately a villain. That's the main thing. So get to the main thing, the I am a villain part, and stop like just being a jerk. Unless that really is the enjoyable part for you, in which case, then maybe it's not like actually a character conflict, but maybe it's a player conflict, because you really want to play with someone whose main enjoyment is making everyone angry.
I think in our case, it might have been a little bit of both. and sometimes I guess as I evolve in my own capacities, there are pro wrestling performers that really, really enjoy that. And I always hear, for example, like Andy Kaufman looking really enviously at pro wrestlers getting to make a whole auditorium enraged at them and then delight in their ultimate defeat. And I think when I was younger, I was like, how could anyone possibly think that? That's complete, complete madness. But now I get it. that's a good deal, but you need to think about the pacing, about when that payoff is going to happen, and not have it linger too long. The audience deserves the fan service a little bit.
Interesting. I still think, right, like that in that case, right, that the wrestler is being just blatantly, overtly a heel, right? They're overtly the villain. Yeah. They've acknowledged I'm the villain. Yeah. They're role playing up I'm the villain. You can all hate me, and you can delight in that, right? So I would argue that ultimately that is focusing on the post secret reveal content, right? That we've all acknowledged they are the villain. The part that's awkward and unpleasant is no one knows I'm a villain. and I'm just annoying, so that when it's revealed that I'm a villain, people will feel good, the other players will feel good about taking me down. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah, I think so.
I mean, I'm all for, like, play up the annoyance factor, sure, but, like, let us in on it, right? Let the rest of the players in on the joke. You know, do the reveal, you know? Or, like, you know, maybe do a move like I was talking about that other person who did a solo scene, right? Do a solo scene where you accidentally, not accidentally, but very intentionally reveal the secret information to the players without revealing it to their characters, so that we can all delight in the situation.
Now, I will say, so Despairal in the chat had an interesting comment saying, I think that, particularly like when we're talking improv lessons a little bit, I think that yes and is very good advice for people who don't know each other, but with two people who know each other very well, I've gotten some big laughs from one adamantly no-selling the other. And look, I've done that myself in small bits, and you're right, at the right time, violating the rule can itself be super funny. And I've also seen a really great gag where something happened and someone literally just said yes and then stopped and just was silent after that. Like, that's all they had. And that was really hilariously funny. You know, you got to know when to break the rules a little bit. But we, as a general rule, I think that the coming, and I think there's also the point about, like, sometimes the yes and is we accept the premise, and now we might have different ideas. The characters might have different ideas about how to approach that, but you're mutually suspending disbelief about what the problem is. And the cases where we've seen, again, of are we gonna work together as a team, or are we gonna have an ongoing argument? The more surprising stuff has come out of how do we work as a team when we didn't expect to in the first place. And I think as a general principle, particularly for ongoing stuff. So, like, for an ongoing D&D campaign, you've got to find a reason to work as a team. So maybe if you have one or two beats of coming together and we're in opposition to start with, but the interesting ongoing evolution is what happens after that.
I mean, I think we're focusing a lot here on the secret of I'm a villain, right? And it's not, the secret isn't always that, right? Like, sure. I'll point
yes,
at
good point.
You know, the one of the scenarios I've run where one of the characters is secretly an MI6 agent, in that scenario, and it's a little different, and I'm focusing on that one rather than the FBI agent one, because the FBI agent one definitely is in an antagonist position with another player. But in the MI6 one, there's actually none of the other players are playing characters who are being investigated by the MI6 agent, right? Right. The MI6 agent is there to investigate actually an NPC. And so revealing that you're an MI6 agent it's just letting the secret out, right? And it's just blowing up the content so that we can be more on point of, like, oh no, I actually have this motivation. You didn't realize, you thought my character's motivations were X, they're actually Y, but I still want to work together, right? I guess in those cases where the secret isn't necessarily, haha, I'm a villain and now we're not going to work together, I think sorry, I'm trying to figure out where I'm going with this. That I don't know. I guess I'm leaning even further deeper into the, like, let the secret out super early then. Like, if the secret is just going to help you work together more, why not get it out there in the open?
Yeah. You know, okay, let me I like tweaking mechanics. Yeah. So you got me thinking here. Yeah. What if, like, I'm thinking the Paranoia game, right? You're playing Paranoia. Yeah. Everybody's got multiple secrets. And according to the rules of the world, when they come out, you need to be executed, right? So again, you're gonna lose your character. But it's established in Paranoia that you have a whole series of clones that are gonna step into the scene after one person gets eliminated. And in the original Paranoia rules, each of the clones was successively weaker. You were supposed to reduce their ability scores which is kind of a pain in the ass, but let's overlook that. You're supposed to reduce the ability scores because each of the clones was like a slightly worse Xerox copy of the original. But what if the advancing clones were getting better? What if the backup clones were actually better than the original character? And now you'd actually have you'd actually have motivation to get rid of this clone and blurt, get the blurt out the secret or use the secret power and actually get them eliminated so that you could use the more powerful clone that was coming up next. Maybe that would have been a slightly, but if you have to tweak the abilities at all, maybe that would have been a better mechanic.
Let me give you one other very weird example I have of this. I played in a D&D game at Gen Con many, many years ago. And it's so funny because I only remember this one detail about the game. It's an AD&D like second edition game, I think, to give you the general idea of what kind of time frame we're talking about that this happened. And the odd thing about the game was that every character had some unusual secret. But the funny thing is I can't remember the other character's secrets. And I don't remember the plot of the game, but I do very vividly remember the character I was playing and his secret. So I was playing a halfling thief. Specifically a one-armed halfling thief. And the secret was that the halfling actually had both of his arms. That in that his missing arm was holding. Yeah, here you go. It's super weird. In his missing hand, he was holding a short sword of quickness. And then he had taken a bag of holding and run it up his arm and attached the bag at the shoulder. Right? What? So he's got a short sword of quickness, ready to go, totally hidden. So at any point in the game, the character could just flip off the bag of holding and immediately stab someone.
What madman came up with that? That's insane.
And it's so bizarre, right? But let me tell you, I was desperately looking for a situation the entire game where I could stab someone.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, when is a good time for me to stab someone? I gotta stab someone. I gotta do this, right? Because it was delightful, right? It's like, oh my god, what a great, ridiculous thing to just suddenly be like, oh yeah, you're a one-armed halfling. Boom! I just stabbed you. But I remember it actually being very difficult. That's the other odd thing, is that like, it seemed like someone came up with this clever idea, but then didn't really work it in or didn't think of like situations to put into the plot of the game where it would make sense that my character would want to do this.
Yeah, I hear that.
But my point here is that I think I'm agreeing with you that like having some mechanical reason of like, I can do this amazing thing. I have to blow my secret to do it, but I can do this amazing thing. Yeah. Yeah.
I also feel like that one feels, I guess the comedy writers have a phrase, hat on a hat, of you have a couple too many premises stacked on each other for processing. And I feel like that one there, and this is similar to the ninja game I was playing in, the bag of holding detail is going to be hard to parse when it happens. Of like, you have two hands and one of them has a sort of quickness and it's in a bag of holding and we didn't notice any of that. So I might suggest editing that to just, he's got it bound up behind his back under the cloak. Might be like easier to parse he's had it behind his back the whole time. Bam. Might be easier to just like understand what the hell just happened.
The bag of holding, though, is pretty clever, right? Because it's like a pretty great disguise, I think, of like, it looks like he's got one arm. I mean, it looks like pretty much, it's very accurately looking like he's got one arm because his other arm is in extra dimensional space.
I get it. It's clever, but I fear it's going to be hard to parse when the moment arrives. But I could be, maybe it's worth it. I get it wrong.
I don't know. The main downside again was just lack of situations where it would be extra amusing for the character to suddenly stab someone.
Oh yeah, and I mean that's you know, tough. Of course, thumbs up. What, two thumbs up to that?
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know. I guess as I think back to the horror games, like there's definitely, you know, that FBI agent. There's a bunch of stuff they can do by admitting they're an FBI agent, right? Like they can like, it seems like the villain is the FBI. So like I have ins into that world and I can discover information, but I'd have to blow my cover to do so. I don't know. Maybe it's just too soft. Maybe it needs a harder mechanic of like, yeah, here's an ability you can use. I'll have to ponder that, I guess, a little more of like what special ability could I?
I'm thinking of you right this second. You got me thinking of the game I played with Max, where the character I was handed had a tactical nuke, and you know, right. So I didn't intend to use it myself. Sort of slightly inspired by like StarCraft characters a little bit. So I grabbed that and I actually didn't intend to use it myself. I blurted it out. I revealed the table. I'd been given a nuke by, you know, my government suppliers. And then a lot of the game became the other players trying to persuade me to use the nuke. And I'm like, I don't think this is the right time. I'm like, no, you got to use the nuke. You got to use the nuke. Now's the right time to use the nuke.
Yep.
And ultimately, blew up. Did ultimately said yes. And now the whole game is very different. Very different. Just like you were saying, Paul.
Well, you need. Yeah. At that point, the kind of Chekhov's gun, you know, comes into play, right? Like we've introduced the idea that there's a nuke. Like it had better go off or we're going to be satisfied. And maybe that's really what we're getting at, right? Like that any kind of secret is ultimately like a Chekhov's gun situation, right? Like the secret is there. We've introduced the secret. It had better be revealed. Otherwise, what's the point? Otherwise, we'll be dissatisfied. The problem, of course, with secrets where it's like pre-written in, where you're talking about pre-made characters, is that the problem is that you have one player who knows the secret. I wonder if that's really the answer, is that to try to embed secrets into the game where more than one player knows the secret.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Mm. And then they can egg each other into revealing. Fascinating. Well, interesting light bulb moment for me here in the 0 hour. Dan, we are out of time.
Oh, rats.
So I gotta leave it here. What, any final thoughts on player secrets in D&D and other RPGs?
I think I didn't know whether we were going to agree or disagree on this one, Paul, but I think we agree that it's better to reveal the secret earlier rather than later, and it makes for good pacing for your game. It makes the game about the thing. And remember, taking the lesson from Invincible, your game might not last long enough to see it otherwise. So reveal it early. Put it on the table.
Yeah. You know, I'm kind of like, I think about like, imagine you're playing a D&D game in, at a convention, and you're playing a wizard who has a fireball. You know that if by the end of the game you haven't cast that fireball, it's a waste, right? You had this thing and you didn't use it. You should have used it. The secret information should be the same. I have the secret information. It should come out. I should find an excuse to make it happen and get it on the table. Otherwise, I'm just going to walk away from this character and never see it again. And, you know, I've lost a great opportunity. So, yeah, I'd encourage players to engage in a little bit of separation of player and character, and maybe even do some things that are not in your character's best interest for the sake of the larger story that is being played out at the table. Get that secret out there so that everybody can you know, have some fun with it.
Definitely. And I think as a mechanics guy, I think the referee could possibly put some thought into mechanics or ways that they can press the gas on that a little bit more, like your great idea right now, Paul, about put the secret on multiple characters and see how they interact with it. So I think that ideas like that might help as well.
Yeah. I'm now totally rethinking these characters. I wonder if I could rewrite the crime boss in such a way that they know that the other guy's an FBI agent, but they have a reason to not blurt it out. That might be interesting. Anyway, viewers, if you have any thoughts on having characters with secrets in their background, when to reveal it, how to reveal it, or how to write content for RPGs where players are encouraged, or players have secrets and are encouraged to reveal them, please leave us some comments here in the YouTube video. We'd love to hear from you. Maybe we will have a second conversation on this down the road.
Definitely. And of course, remember that you can like, follow, and subscribe to us. We're on YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, GitHub, places like that. We have the handle Wandering DMs on all those sites. So please reveal that like button's power.
If you prefer to listen to our show in audio-only podcast format, you can find those podcasts at our website at wanderingdms.com. They're also available through various podcast carriers such as iTunes, Spotify, Pocket Cast, Podcast Addict. If you're listening to this show right now on one of those third-party sites and it offers the ability to do so, please rate and review our show. That helps other listeners find our show, and we really appreciate it.
It really does. And of course, big thanks to our patrons who support the show here. If you'd like to join them, like Paul said at the top of the hour, please visit patreon.com/wanderingdms, and you'll see our different tiers. Every tier gets you access to our Discord server where the conversation's continuing around the clock. And we will be there for our continued video after chat with patrons in about 10 minutes or so. Also upcoming this week, I'll be back Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern time, for more of Dan's Old Time Mini Show. And I'll be start making some molds for some more classic Star Frontiers miniatures. In this case, I think I'm going to be making the most dangerous monster in all of Star Frontiers this Thursday, and that is humans. So please tune in for that on Thursday. And of course, we are live every exactly. So don't forget, we will be back next Sunday, and happy Cinco de Mayo today for those who celebrate. So we are live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern time. So please, we hope you'll join us again next week for another thought-provoking discussion.
We'll see you.